Okay, we're going to call the Education Committee to order. Time is 8 o'clock, a little bit after 8. And attendance today is Co-Chairman Thomas, Vice Chairman Davis, Senator Stevens, Senator Huggins, and myself, Co-Chair Meyer. We have a quorum to conduct business. I appreciate everybody being here Friday morning, 8 o'clock. It's always tough. The first thing we're going to take up is the Senate Bill 283. We're not anticipating that this will take too long. And then we'd like to get right in back into the Governor's Performance Scholarship Program, Senate Bill 224. So unless there's anything to come before the committee before we get started, Senator Thomas, you're the sponsor of this bill. Did you want to have your trusty staff present the bill, or how do you want to work this?
I'll do a thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do a sponsor statement, and then Murray Richmond is available for questions regarding anything about the bill that may come up. So in that case, if that's with your approval.
Go ahead.
Thank you. SB 283 is an act relating to the legal age for attending school and providing for an effective date. A good ending is made by a good beginning. If we're going to assure that our students finish school successfully, we need to assure that they have a strong beginning. Studies show that early involvement in education is crucial to the success of a child. Waiting until a child is 7 before starting the education process may hinder a child's academic success. Involvement in Head Start, pre-kindergarten programs, or other brain smart programs for children enhances their chances for later success in school and work. Under our current law, children do not have to enter the school system until they are 7 years old. SB 283 changes the mandatory enrollment age to 6. The trend is to start children off at younger ages rather than waiting. The majority of Alaskan children are already in school by age 6. State funds kindergarten for students as young as 5, as well as pilot programs for pre-kindergarten children. SB 283 brings statute closer to the reality of educational practice in the state. Currently, 32 states have a minimum school age of 5 or 6. Of those 32 states, the overwhelming majority, 24, have established age 6 as the mandatory starting point. Only 16 states have a starting point at age 7. Originally, the minimum age in Alaska was 8 and was lowered to 7 by 1929. The minimum age has remained a constant since then, even as society and educational practice has gone through major changes. Education, early education, is very important. Senate Bill 283 gives our children the beginning they deserve. And with that, I'd answer any questions, or there is a variety of information in the packet indicating some of the studies that have been done, as well as I'm sure most of you have at one time or another attended the Bright Beginnings presentations, which show the dramatic growth of the brain from basically birth to the age of about 7 or so, and then it kind of flattens out a little bit. So we're missing a great opportunity here to get kids in school to also find out if they will be having any learning disabilities that we might earlier find and correct, or at least give them a better ability to get to their potential, highest potential, as well as there are a lot of alternatives anyhow that are available. So we feel that in most cases, those that most need the schooling are the ones that are not being put in school early enough.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Senator Thomas, any questions from the committee? Mr. Murray, did you have anything to add?
If there are no questions, I'd be glad to answer any questions that the committee has.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just, I guess, Head Start has some parameters, and does this impact Head Start's parameters?
Through the chair, respectfully, this reflects nothing that is currently happening. What this does is bring the statute up to the reality of practice that we have. The majority of children are already in age by this. Are in school by this time. This would not affect Head Start at all.
Thank you.
And if I may, maybe to your question as well, I think that this is affecting those kids that are in no formal educational training at any point is what it amounts to, for a variety of reasons, whether it's cultural reasons or immigration, people that have immigrated, that school is not maybe as important, or they're a little bit afraid of the system or not familiar with it. So we think it brings those to the system that most need it.
Very good. And my apologies, Mr. Richmond. Call me Mr. Murray. Murray Richmond.
I'll answer to anything, sir.
Okay, great. Okay, Yes, Senator Stevens.
Are we getting any response on this from school boards, school districts, any reaction to this bill?
Through the chair, the only response we've had is from the Literacy Council, who is in favor of this bill.
Senator Thomas.
And if I may, and the response that I've had from at least the two school districts I spoke to, which was Anchorage, Como, Ms. Como, and Superintendent Wagner in Fairbanks, was positive. And I believe I've spoken to the commissioner, but I wouldn't say that for sure. But he's nodding his head with approval anyhow back there.
Yeah. Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Almost everything is opposed by somebody, which I guess my question would be, how much visibility has this gotten? I mean, has it gone to the Homeschool Association and, I mean, charter, I mean, whatever the different groups are? I mean, it sounds like a great idea to me, but on the other hand, we know that no matter what we change to, that we don't have the willpower, nor does the law enforcement people want to do truancy or any of those sorts of things. So are we really accomplishing something, or are we just facilitating what we're already doing?
Respectfully, through the chair, I think that this brings our statute into what we're actually doing now. And by having the age 7, I think we're making a statement that we don't feel it's important. By changing it down to 6, I think we are recognizing that early childhood development is, we need to be jumping in at that stage. Further, you talked about opposition. There are 12 exemptions in current statute for not putting your child in school. None of those are affected by this one. They would include things like homeschooling or absence, illness, things like that. So,
okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Davis?
This bill has had exposure for some years now. For the age 6, also to bring it down to age 5, we're really not coming into compliance, but 6 is better than 7, and so I support the bill, and I am a co-sponsor on it. But we've had this bill introduced almost every year that I've been down here in one form or another. So we've had lots of conversations on it. It's not like it's brand new to homeschoolers or anyone else. They know about this. I don't think they have any real problem with that particular 6, more so than they did with the 5. So I agree when Senator Thomas came and said he thought 6 was a great age to bring in. That's better than what we have, so we will take that. But it's had lots of exposure. And no one, except those parents that feel that, you know, I want to keep my child at home until they're 7. I don't think the school district or anyone else should be able to tell me that, but there are those 12 exemptions there. They can choose one of those if they do not want their child in school. But at age 5, 95% of our children are going to kindergarten. So we're really not changing a procedure. We're just bringing the age down, and even that we're not in conformity, because if it was, we'd be taking it to age 5.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? So, Senator Davis, I guess to just follow up on Senator Huggins' question or concerns, because we aren't hearing any opposition to this, and you said this bill has been around a while. Is the reason why it hasn't passed before now because we tried to go to 6 and or we tried to go to 5?
There's a variety of reasons why the bill hasn't passed. It's just over the last, I'll say the last 2 sessions, that it has really gotten some movement. In the past, it had been introduced, but it had never got the amount of attention that it needed to be heard. But for the last 4 years, it has. But it was at age 5 and not 6.
Okay. Okay. That may be the reason. I know certainly we've had this this bill posted for some time, and so that notice has been out to the public about this. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Richmond or the sponsor, Senator Thomas? Senator Stevens.
This is probably a pretty fundamental question that I really don't know the answer to, but a child who turns 6 any time during a school year, say you turn 6 in December, would you have to start in that year or wait till the next year?
Through the chair, my understanding is there's a cutoff date that's established, and if the child is six before that age, before that cutoff date, they would be starting. If they turn six, or after that cutoff date, if they turn six now, before.
What do you mean by the cutoff date?
If a child is six as of October something or September 30th, if they're six by that age, they should be in school. If they're not six by that age, then they don't. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be.
Okay, thanks.
You might want to see if the commissioner's nodding behind me on that one.
He's not doing anything. That's what's got us puzzled.
His staff is nodding. That's true. There is a cutoff date, and if you're that age by that time, you have to start school. And if you turn after that, you do not. You're not required. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Richmond. Thank you. Commissioner, you want to comment on this? Do you have any feelings, concerns? Is there anyone to testify, by the way? No? Okay. Go ahead,
Thank you, Chair Meyer. For the record, my name is Larry Ledoux. I'm the Commissioner of Education and Early Development. The only comment I have is that I think that this is probably a good thing. You know, it's important that young people be in school as early as possible or under the instruction of their parents or in a private school or a public school program so they can learn to read. Reading is so important to kids. That if we don't have them early or if parents aren't working with them early, it follows them all the way through life. And we do have young people that age whose parents are not sending them to school or homeschooling. What this allows us to do is to intervene if that's happening to make sure that these children are in school so that we can help them learn to read. So it does extend it downward so that we can intervene if necessary. So that's my position on it. I think it's in that aspect alone, it's good for kids.
Okay, very good. Any questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Commissioner Ledoux, there is one other element that pops up every once in a while, and it's parents asking for a waiver to start younger kids. And I'm not sure whether this impacts that younger kids waiver or not. I mean, I don't even know what the parameters are, but I know that there are parents that I want my child to be able to start earlier than the mandatory age. And whether this now goes to 4 years old or five, I'm not sure what it would.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the statutes allow a student who is 5 years old by September 15th to attend school. This does not affect that. I will, as an editorial, say that I think it's not good to start kids earlier than they should, and it interrupts their education. And after many, many years of working with these little ones, I haven't seen a lot of good over starting them really early. So I support the current law, and this will not affect that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the commissioner? Seeing none, thank you for joining us today. Okay. And so is there anyone who would like to testify here in Juneau? Okay. And there's no one online, correct? Okay. Then we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Any other discussion on the bill? Does it have a zero fiscal note? Did I notice? Yep. Okay, zero fiscal note. Okay, well, there's no other discussion, comments, concerns. Senator Davis.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we move Senate Bill 283, version R, from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, thanks, Senator Davis. Any objection? Seeing none, then, without objection, Senate Bill 283 moves from committee onto its next committee. So with that, let's take a brief at ease. And
the bill's not here. I'll be here in a little bit. So
I'm sorry?
The bill will be down here.
Okay. All right. Very good. Let's go ahead and take a brief at ease, get the commissioner up, and switch over now to the governor's scholarship program. So with that, we'll just take a brief at ease. Hey, we are back, and we want to welcome Senator Olson with us as well.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning. So we are now back to the Governor's Performance Scholarship Program, Senate Bill 224. I believe we have the S version is the one that's before the committee at this time. And there is a lot of paper here. I think, Commissioner, if you could let us know what you're referring to, we'll try to follow along. So with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to the Commissioner. He had an opportunity to discuss some of the changes briefly last time, and so we want to allow more time and to go into more detail about any concerns you may have with the new CS. Commissioner.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. For the record, my name is Larry Ledoux. I'm the Commissioner of Education and Early Development. I just wanted to start by saying that the department has read the book, Crossing the Finish Line. Thank you to Senator Stevens for the recommendation. And we had a hard time finding it, but it was very informative. And we would be happy to share in case somebody wants it to read it.
Did you put it on your recommended list?
Yes.
There's some hesitation there.
Senator Meyer, we had the opportunity yesterday to meet with two of the legislative assistants who have been involved in crafting the bill, and as a result of that conversation, we're going to share some of our concerns or points in evaluating the community substitute. The first is referring to the removal of the intent goal language. I'm not going to read the goals again, but I think that they're very important because they sort of outline the whole purpose of this bill, and that's to change the attitudes of young people beginning in sixth grade, if you will, and to inform their parents and to inspire, to encourage, to invite young people to work harder. And, you know, we had some discussion yesterday about if this is a merit, why would a C-plus qualify? And to me, C-plus is probably one of the most important areas that we want to affect, because these aren't kids that are getting C-pluses right now. These are going to be kids who are getting C-pluses taking a rigorous curriculum. And to do that, we're looking at kids or young people that normally would avoid any course that they don't have to take. Kids don't take 4 years of math for enjoyment. They don't take 4 years of social studies or 3 years. They take what they absolutely have to get by. If this comes into effect and a young person elects, who normally would not, to take a rigorous curriculum to prepare for a career technical scholarship or a college, and they get a C+, that's an incredible achievement of that young people. Those are the ones that I want to inspire. Those are the ones who are unlikely to graduate, who are passively going through the school system and not taking advantage of what we're doing. If we can get them to select courses that they would never take and get a C+, that's something. And that tells me that that student is on a trajectory for success in college, in work, in life, because they're making choices. And that's why the accountability is so important in this thing. Because a child, a young person, will not take those courses. They don't right now. They just try to get by. And getting by is not good enough. So I'm very supportive of that particular point. Also means that the students who are getting C's now may be getting B's. And the B students will be getting A's. It's a pulling everybody forward. And that's why I think that the goals of the program, even though I'm told by attorneys they may strip out those kinds of things and put them into intent language, it's very important that we hold on to those as much as possible. I'd also say that, and I'm going to move quickly here, but that this bill, this attempt to inspire kids to work harder, is part of a comprehensive effort to increase the success of our kids. And we're moving through early learning, literacy, middle school interventions, graduation rate. We're working with teacher quality. We're working with virtual education. We are moving along a continuum for success. This is a critical component because it targets the attitudes of kids, the attitudes. And that's the one thing as parents we know that scares us the most. So we are very supportive of keeping that language. The next is referring to Section 5, 1443, 810, page 8, line 3 through 7. What it does, it removes what the committee substitute has done. It completely removed the career scholarship and left the three academic, and then said that you could use the academic scholarships to go to a career school. Now, the House version and the other versions have three academic scholarships and then a separate career and technical education scholarship. Now, if you don't mind me referring to the House version now and then, because of their amendments, a student who earns an academic scholarship, one of the three levels, is fully able to use those funds earned for a career scholarship, so they can come down the opposite way. And the reason we had separate career tech and separate academic is because so often we forget career and technical education. It gets buried in the college prep work. And the vast majority of our young people are not going to be going to college. They're going to be entering the professions. And we separated them because we don't want one to be lost in the effort to prepare kids from college. And the other reason that we separated them is that the Department of Education, or the State Board of Education, is charged in the bill to develop the programmatic standards for the scholarship. And I visualize in math and science a slightly different set of courses that would meet the term rigorous for each scholarship. And it's not in language arts. They have to do language arts, and that's just clear. Speaking, listening, reading, writing, they have to have 4 years of that, and you can't waver from that. It's a state law. The same with social studies. There's lots of courses that meet that. And whether it's a social studies course for prep for college or for life, there's no division between either scholarship. We need social studies. But when you get to, let's say, math, the minimum that we believe, and we've talked about extensively in the other body, for math is Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and Geometry. Every student needs that. That's well established, and both of them would require that. But is it necessary for a young person who's going to be, I don't know, a fisherman to study calculus, to go to tech school? The answer is no. Or to take physics. Instead of physics, you can take power mechanics. There's lots. We want to be able to differentiate just a little bit in math and science so that we don't try to force every child to take advanced trigonometry or calculus if they're going to be a diesel mechanic, which requires lots of math, by the way. So by combining them into one, we lose the ability to, one, protect the career and tech. The career and technical education's identity is a viable part of this program, and we lose the ability to add slight changes in the program. And I say very slight because they would only be math and science. And if you look at math, they all have to take at least Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and Geometry. So we're looking at one course. And it's the same with science. We're perhaps looking at just one course variation, but that's an important variation for many of those young people. So that's the second. The third is in on page 11, line 2, there's a significant change where we allow 12 semesters of paid scholarship. That allows a young person to go to college for 6 years. And what I would say is this. If I had a scholarship to go 6 years, because I sort of enjoyed college a lot of the time, there were parts of it that were quite enjoyable, I would have stayed six if somebody was paying the bill. But I believe part of this is accountability, that we want young people, and research shows that if you stay on course once you begin, you are more likely to complete. We want to change the behavior of young people. We want them to take a full-time load, and we want them to complete it in 4 years. And every year they go beyond 4 years, they're going to accumulate increased debt. They're going to owe more money. Their parents are going to. And what we want students to do, besides working hard in high school, we want them to work hard in college. And then this would allow that. Also, it would increase the cost of the scholarship program by over 50%. Assuming students took advantage of all 12 semesters, it would be a 50% increase in the entire cost of the scholarships.
Okay, Commissioner, what you said that was page 11?
I believe it's page 11, line 21.
Okay, on the S version. Okay, all right, just want to make sure everybody's following.
Okay, Senator Myers, I'm trying to operate from my list because otherwise I'll get buried in all these papers I have at my desk.
I know, and then you've got the House version and our version. It's confusing. So, okay, you're doing fine. Thank you.
The other area comes from Section 5, 14.43.815, page 9, lines 22 through 26 in the House version.
Sorry, would you say that again? Oh, okay, that's in the House version.
Yeah, page 9, lines 22 through 26. It deletes the 6-year window of eligibility, making the scholarship available indefinitely to students. You know, one of the things that we know, and in most scholarship state programs, they require the student to begin college right after high school to take advantage of the scholarship. In Alaska, that's not how we attend college many times. Sometimes young people will take time off. Sometimes they'll go to college out of state. In fact, I encouraged my own children to take their first year outside of state just so that they could find out what it's like down there so they would appreciate what Alaska is like, was my intent in any case. So we allow that flexibility so a young person can start any time within that six-year window. If we extend it indefinitely, then the cost of the scholarship will continue. It means that somebody who's my age, assuming it lasts that long, could come in and claim a scholarship on the system. And it doesn't provide for the accountability that we need. It also says that a young person who gets this or who earns this scholarship doesn't have to use it. They don't have. We want them to go to college or tech school. And by the way, if I ever say college, I mean tech school at the same time. And again, that's another reason why we have to have them separate. So we believe that the 6 years provides the flexibility that a young person needs, and indeed, they can even go outside and get a baccalaureate degree and have 2 years of eligibility left to use for a graduate degree if they do it in Alaska. So that's a concern there. I think it's sort of a technical change, and the next is removes from House CS version the approved tuition. When we developed the cost of the program, when I went to school, if you took 12 credits, between 12 and 18 was the same cost. It's not that way anymore. They charge by the credit. So when we first were crafting the legislation, we just said full time. And the university said, don't do that because 15 credits is going to cost more than 12. And so when we based the cost estimate, we based it on 15 credits. And the community substitute, they just say full time. And we believe it should say 15 credits because that's a typical load for a young person in college, and that would provide them greater funds to attend college. So I think that's sort of a technical amendment more than anything else.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Davis.
Are you referring to RCS when you state that? Because you mentioned House having that in their bill.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, Davis, the House version is based on 15 credits. The community substitute that was introduced on Monday just says full time. And we believe what you wanted to say was 15 credits.
So what are we saying in ours?
Full time?
Just full time?
Full time.
Yeah. Which would be the 15 hours?
No, full time would be interpreted as 12 credits instead of 15.
And you like that better?
No. Through the chair, Senator Davis, I believe it should say 15 credits.
Okay.
So that the students get the maximum amount.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, Senator Thomas.
And then would you then suggest also that we define halftime in credit hours rather than just suggesting or just making reference to it, or is that already defined somewhere?
Chair Thomas, this is an area that we discussed extensively with the House, and I'm going to let Diane Barron speak to that. I can, but she does this all the time, and I like to give you accurate.
Okay.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and I actually did have a recommendation, Senator Thomas, relative to the halftime, just to indicate that the halftime recipient is eligible for 50% of their full scholarship amount. So it would just cap it at 50%. Currently, the bill indicates that they'll get a pro rata benefit, but I think it would be more effective to simply say 50% of the full-time cap relative to their eligibility, or words to that effect.
And what about the credit hour?
Yeah, hours.
If my recommendation is presumptive on the bill containing the 15 credit calculation. For full-time, that's $47.55, so it would be 50% of that. At the 100% level, then you would, at the 75% level, it would be half of that amount and ratchet down to the smaller award amount.
I think what Senator Thomas is, I think what he's saying is that 7 hours, 8 hours, six
hours? Oh, I'm sorry. Half-time is any enrollment, minimum of six credits, up to 11. So anyone attending between the 6 and 11 credit level is considered half-time.
Okay.
And Commissioner, if I could, your previous comment, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to follow along, and I think what you're trying to tell us is the areas of concern you have with RCS. And you'd like to see us go back to the 6 years versus we left it open, if I recall. And I think that was to deal with the non-traditional student. And is that?
Senator Meyer, that's correct.
Okay. And Senator Stevens? Yes, Senator Davis.
I know we left it open, but now isn't it also open in the House version?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, no, it's 6 years and 8 semesters.
Senator Stevens?
Maybe Ms. Behrens would address that issue of non-traditional students. That's an important issue to all of us. I'm sure it is to you as well. Are there other avenues, other ways to address the non-traditional student other than in this scholarship program? And maybe you could help us there. I don't need to go off on a big discussion, but just briefly.
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, there is a program that exists in state statute that, if funded, primarily serves non-traditional students, the Alaska Advantage Education Grant. If you look at who actually receives that grant, and it is a needs-based grant, they are, their average age has been anywhere from 29 to 31 years. They're all independent students. They are not dependent students from a financial aid perspective, and typically they're your non-traditional core folks.
So from my point, it's always been that it's really important not to forget those students, because it seems to me they make up a bigger portion of our student body in Alaska than they do in the rest of country, in my experience. Could you comment on that?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I think that is true, and I think one of the primary objectives of this bill is to change that for Alaska going forward, because we do know that young people economically, by delaying their education, ultimately reduce the benefit to them and their families, the economic benefit, and probably social and other benefits as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could
Senator
I just
sure.
piggyback on that also? I've asked that question before, and you mentioned the Alaska Advantage grant. Is that fully state-funded, or is there federal funds in there? I forgot.
Through the chair, Senator Davis, I would, in addition to answering your question, also elaborate a little bit so we know the two programs are not analogous in terms of the amount of aid available. But specifically to your question, it's a blend of funds. There are some state general funds that were appropriated through the capital budget. There are some small amount of federal funds. And up till the current year, there has been some student loan corporation receipts included in that. So it's been a mix of funding. But I would say that unless, under that program, unless you're in a workforce shortage program of study, the most you can receive in a year is $1,000 of aid. If you are in a workforce shortage program, then you can receive up to $2,000 a year of aid. So in terms of kind of the purchasing power through that program, it is not comparable to what we're proposing under the GPS program.
And did you not state that you prefer not to have that added? And I think maybe it was the commissioner that said that he would not particularly like to have that added into the governor's plan.
Through the chair, Senator Davis, I believe they're two different programs. I also recognize that Senator Stevens is indicated, but as Diane Behrens has indicated, the entire purpose of this program is to make sure that kids go to college early and that they complete their program and not delay that. They're two different programs, and I think that the funding for such a program would be extensive compared to what we have available through this program. But at the same time, I'm not saying that that's not an important program, because I believe it is.
Oh, I believe that you think that's an important program. My confusion right now, you're saying what you want in your plan, but you're not actually giving us any ideas on how we can do what we want to do for the non-traditional student. if there is something that can be added to this bill. Recommendations saying maybe we could live with this, maybe this would work. And I hear no one saying that. You talk about this Alaska Advantage grant, but you're saying that's just for certain programs that they're enrolled in, and they can only get up to a $2,000 in it, basically $1,000 in that. That's not going to take care of that student that needs the fund. I was wondering if there was some component that you would look at to say, well, yeah, we could add this into this bill or not. I say we recommend that you do it another way.
Through the chair, Senator Davis, nationally there are a number of options to, you know, meet the need that has been discussed here. I don't know of any way to respond to this need within this bill without changing the purpose of this bill, you know, to invite students to work harder and to help them be successful in college for the reasons, you know, that have been articulated as in the bill. But so I don't know. It would certainly be easy to say we're going to add a non-traditional needs-based component to the bill, but again, that would be so different from the intent of this bill that it would be difficult. I would certainly be willing to work with the senator to help craft such a bill in the future, you know, if that were necessary. But again, I operate at the direction of the governor, but I would be certainly happy to work with you to examine that, to look at other what other states do. But with regard to this bill, I don't have any recommendations on how you could combine the two and still maintain the goals of the program.
Mr. Chairman, could I continue?
Sure, Senator Davis.
I'll go back to the Elastic Advantage program. You said for the last year or so, the money that's been put into that grant line was put in by the state, right?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, the actual appropriation was for the FY09 budget. It was in the capital budget. The commission has spread the funds received in the capital budget that over 3 years. So the last year in which there will be funds already appropriated to the program will be the 10-11 year. So this upcoming fall, spring academic year will be the last year that there are funds already appropriated
and
to that program.
And how much money, a basic amount that they will be getting from that, that they are getting, students?
The amount that was funded, aggregate amount funded for the 9-10 year was just under $1 million total to the program.
But what's the total amount of money the student would be able to get from that?
If they are just a regular enrolled student, it would be $1,000. If they're enrolled in one of the shortage workforce areas, it's $2,000.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We could continue on the traditional student, or we can go through his list of concerns. What would you like to do, Senator Stevens?
I just like to follow up on
sure,
the issue, because I
okay.
think it's pertinent what Commissioner said. Later in dealing with the letter of intent, and looking at that letter of intent, the first five items are all dealing with high school, and that makes sense. You know, we've got to make sure the students are ready to go to college. But when we look at the overall goal, go back to the fundamentals of where we want to go, which I think you were saying earlier, aren't we really saying that the real purpose of this scholarship, as you've said, is to encourage students to begin college early and to get them to complete in 4 years? Would that be a real basic fundamental goal of a program like this?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, yes.
So I just suggest when we get to the letter of intent that we include that pretty early on, begin college early, right out of high school, and complete within 4 years.
Okay, very good. Okay, Commissioner, you want to continue through the CS and your concerns with the CS?
Thank you, Senator Meyer. I just have a few more, and then okay. Diane Behrens has a few that she'll speak to.
Okay.
Very quickly, Ian, both versions, the definition of the commissioner of the department, section 5, 14.43.890, page 15, we believe that those definitions should be in the bill, and that's on the advice of our departmental lawyer, and we're just looking for the definition of commissioner in the department. It's sort of very cosmetic, not very important compared to the rest, but I'm just mentioning it. I'd also like to just reference the list that we talked about last week, and I try to keep it fairly simple. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development is going to maintain a list of eligible programs. It's not going to be referencing any other lists that are developed or referenced in law. We want to make sure that the programs that the scholarship is supporting through young people are quality, that they're contributing to the workforce needs in Alaska, and they're the agency best able to do that. The other lists that they develop are for different purposes. We just want quality programs in Alaska, and so we feel that they will be developing and monitoring a list to make sure that we don't have all these new programs that are developing that are not quality. And finally, for at least my comments,
Department of Labor will have the list, because there are I think we have a copy of this. There's like three different lists.
Senator Meyer, yes. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development will develop the list of eligible career and technical education programs.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And finally, the $3,000 limit on the career and technical education track. First point is that I think it's a good number. If you look at Avtech, which is probably one of the larger non-university programs in the state, and I introduced information last time we met that indicates that $3,000 a year for 2 years will cover and is above most of their tuition charges, and most of their programs are much, much less than 2 years in duration. What we don't want to do is to set a gold standard so that all the programs around the state immediately raise their costs to take advantage of this program. We believe that $3,000 is a fair figure. The needs-based component applies to that, as it does to the university. And also, 90% of the career and technical education programs are offered by the University of Alaska already. And so we also...
references for the committee here, NRCS, we had taken out the $3,000 and made it the same as if you went to the University of Alaska. And what you're saying is you want to go back to the $3,000 for VOTEC schools.
Senator Meyer, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
I would also, and finally, I would say that wisely in the bill, there's an annual review and report to the legislature. If we find out that it's not working for career and technical, that it's insufficient, then I believe we can come back and change that if necessary. Or you could give authority to the state board to review it annually and make sure that it's appropriate. But I believe 3,000 is a very appropriate amount. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Martins?
Thank you. Again, for the record, Diane Behrens. I had a few things that are probably more technical in nature. I had sent correspondence to the chair's attention regarding Section 4 in the bill. Section 4, which begins on page 5, actually adds the authority for the Student Loan Corporation to enter into an agreement with the commission to administer this program. It's my recommendation that this section be struck in its entirety. The commission certainly and its staff can carry out activities without having to enter into a contract with a corporation. My concern would be any interpretation by an external party that this program is somehow an obligation of the Student Loan Corporation rather than the state of Alaska. The next item I wanted to speak to is in Section 5. Pages 8 and 9. On page 8, beginning at line 4 and continuing through line 14, there are the language that speaks to the commission administering the daily operations of the program. However, on page 9, lines 14 through 18, it gives the department the authority to adopt regulations setting out the application procedure, when I think it would be more appropriate for the commission to be tasked with that responsibility. The next item I mentioned just briefly previously on page 11, also in section 5. There is a reference starting on line 19, continuing through line 20, to the half-time student enrolled on a half-time basis being eligible for an award on a pro rata basis. My recommendation there is to cap that at 50% of the amount that they would receive if they were attending full-time. And then the other issue on this in this section is the one is a difference from the House version, if I may refer to that, where the full-time tuition is not only specified as to what full-time is and what amount might be calculated to be that. The number that's kind of locked down here is 2009-2010. It also simply says at the qualified post-secondary institution at which the student intends to enroll. There's no reference to the University of Alaska here if, in fact, the University of Alaska tuition is going to be the benchmark for the program. So that may just have been an oversight. But as I mentioned in the analysis of the fiscal note, if, in fact, the benchmark isn't tied to a specific institution, there are institutions in the state which do charge substantially higher tuition, and there would be a it wouldn't be uniform in terms of where students attended and how much they would be eligible to receive.
No, you're absolutely right. Our intent was to tie it to the University of Alaska, because certainly if you tied it to APU, you'd have a huge fiscal note.
Substantially higher.
But there, it's my understanding there's quite a bit of difference between all three campuses, so AS, the Southeast, the Fairbanks, and the Anchorage campus. So, but I would assume we'd leave it up to you to decide which campus you want to use as your reference.
Yes, Mr. Chair, what we've done for the purposes of calculating the fiscal note is essentially averaging a upper and lower division blend of 15 credits. So we've used that 15 credits as the amount of the award.
So 15 credits at the Anchorage campus is the same as the Southeast campus, as same as the Fairbanks campus?
It is. There is some variation at Prince William Sound and some of the rural campuses.
Okay.
There was discretion given to chancellors in those areas or college presidents at those areas to set slightly lower rates. Let's see. And then I think the last item I had, and this was something that just arose in Section 8 of the bill, which begins on page 16 and continues through page 21. It's essentially an update of the procurement code to allow the commission, the specific lines are on page 20, lines 22 to 26. It allows,
I'm sorry.
Page 20.
Okay.
Lines 22 to 26. Currently, the commission is has an exemption for procurement for the purposes of identifying servicing systems for the guarantee and dispersing of financial aid. The reference here is changed to include the GPS program. But the guarantee phrase that's used on line 23 is really very specific to the federal type programs, and I would just request that we replace guarantee with servicing, which is a more generic term that would be more all in servicing. So it would read for the servicing and dispersing of financial aid money. Ah, yes, the last thing, thank you, Commissioner. In the revised version in the House, we had put in place a time frame for the student to apply for, and I think this may have just been a misunderstanding. We had a provision that said a student may not apply for a GPS award any earlier than 6 months prior to graduation. It doesn't list a date by which they must have applied. The reason for that was that from an administrative standpoint, and I think for the benefit of students, it doesn't make sense for them to think that they can apply for an award their freshman year in high school and that it's meaningful. In fact, there may be changes in the program between their freshman year and their senior year. So we had just suggested that the application not be sort of timely unless they're within 6 months of graduation. If they're going to graduate as a junior because they've accelerated, it would be just 6 months from the point of graduation. So we would ask for that time frame to be put back into the bill.
Okay. We left it out entirely in RCS?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You guys got it? Okay. Okay. Was there anything else, Ms. Behrens?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner?
No, Mr. Chair.
You know, just kind of looking at some of the comments and concerns that you had between your original bill, our bill, House's bill, I think that the big one is going to be the traditional student that we're going to have to wrestle with. Everything else is fairly minor. Does the committee have any questions? For the commissioner, let me go to Senator Huggins.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Chairman, just a couple things. One that we talked very briefly about was we still have not addressed the subject of shortage disciplines on the college campus. And we'll take math teacher as an example. Whether a component here should target producing math teachers or whatever else, what other shortage disciplines we have that we need within the state. We talked about the labor force per se, but not the certified force in this case. number one. Number two, and this is an idea that quite frankly was brought to me by college students saying, we know from looking around and our experience that the first year is the big attrition factor. The first quarter is the biggest attrition factor. And the student's point was said, well, why don't you look at making everybody eligible to get the scholarship, but you had to prove yourself. You retroactively would get paid for your first quarter if there was going to be a trial period or for the first year. And I said, that may complicate the life of all of us, but I will mention that from our students off our campuses. He brought that thought forward.
Commissioner?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins. You know,
And before you answer, let me just give you their rationale, in all fairness. They said that, you know, understand the attrition, but there's an implied motivation factor that, okay, people are watching. I have at stake is my scholarship. And if I do well in the first quarter, which is you would hope then they do well in the first year, that it's an incentive factor that's saying the system is looking. I will get retroactively compensated for that period, pay for the tuition, what I'm eligible for, but not until I'm successful in the first quarter or the first year, I mean, you name your increment. And for Ms. Behrens and others that are distributing the money, then we're not distributing money for those people that are just burning the money up because of whatever habits they have that will not allow them to be successful in school. I said I would bring that forward on behalf of students, and there it is.
Through the chair, this is Diane Behrens. Senator Huggins, certainly thank you for giving us that food for thought. I know my instinctive reaction to that, just from an administrator's standpoint, is that it may cost more to administer that program than we save in undisbursed funds to students who drop out during that first year. I would also indicate that the information that I've received from the university, and it's surprising to me and it's counterintuitive, is that more students actually persist through their first year into their second year, and where they drop is after they've begun that third semester. And so, you know, we can speculate about what the reasons for that might be, one of them primarily being their consideration of their financial circumstances after three semesters of funding their education. But I also think from a technical standpoint, that would create a twist for financial aid administrators that would be, and I think I'm not exaggerating, nightmarish for them to administer, because what that would probably do with a retroactive application of scholarship aid is require them to essentially recalculate that student's financial aid package as a result of late arriving non-loan aid. So I think it would be highly problematic from an administrative standpoint.
Mr. Chair, Senator Huggins, I also believe that if this program is successful, and I believe it will be, we will be sending students to the university who will be well prepared to engage successfully in their first year of college. And so I don't think that even if we were losing our students the first year, and we are, we won't lose as many because they'll be prepared.
Anything else, Senator Huggins?
Yeah, well, it just not today because we've got to go to finance, but the portion of the shortage professions. I would like to have that conversation because we're saying we need more math. We're going to need more math teachers, I think, and other things of that nature, more doctors. Well, I mean, whatever it turns out to be. So, but.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Huggins, there are a number of federal programs that target specifically teachers in the math and sciences, and I will get some information to your committee regarding those.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. I know several of you need to head off to Senate Finance, so feel free to go. And then I think the rest of us, if we still have more questions for the commissioner, you're willing to stay a few more minutes? Okay. Very good. Senator Stevens.
Could we complete the issue of talking about math classes? I understand what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense, Commissioner, that algebra 1, 2, and geometry would be logical for everyone. And what about in the sciences? We didn't talk about that. What specific science classes would you recommend, just so we know what those would be?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I believe that in the sciences, that strong life science, physical science, earth science, you know, another course on top of that of applied science, lab courses. I think in science it's more eclectic, that students have more elective choices from anatomy to advanced chemistry. And they're pretty very laid out within schools. Now, with the Career Tech program, we're looking at perhaps power mechanics, physical science instead of physics, other courses that don't necessarily prepare them for the high-level academic regimen of a college. I think more applied science, problem-solving, technical analysis, those kinds of courses that exist. We did create a list of potential courses that I will send on to the committee for the other body to give you an idea of what we were talking about there.
Mr. Chairman, so sure. Where trigonometry may not be necessary for all students, you'd say physics may not be necessary as well.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that's absolutely right. We want to provide maximum flexibility, but we believe that we have to protect the rigor of these courses. So not any course that has a science label on it will count as science. And so we intend to work with school districts to develop the standards and the courses that would meet the requirement. Because if you have a course without the rigor, the program will not work. I do not expect a student who's on a purely career tech path, though, maybe they want to be a beautician, to have to take calculus or physics necessarily.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Senator Stevens?
No, thank you.
Senator Davis?
No.
Okay. I think we had one person who called in to testify, but we closed public testimony on this, so we'll just continue on. The intent of the committee, Commissioner, was to get your concerns, your thoughts on RCS. And I think what we're going to do then on Monday is discuss your concerns, see which ones we agree with, don't agree with, and try to come forward either with another CS on Wednesday or just amend the existing CS that we have. And what we'd like to do, I think, is move this out Wednesday or Friday at the latest of next week. Senator Stevens?
On the letter of intent, mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I think that's a very important issue, and I think maybe some input from Commissioner and Ms. Behrens might be helpful there. As I look at the letter of intent, it really is focused on what happens in high schools and even grade school, and that's certainly an outcome of this and very important, but it seems to me the primary goal here is we need to start with the fact that we want students to enter college early, we want them to complete college. That's the goal. That's the reason for a graduate, that's the reason for a scholarship. All of the other things that happen as a result of that, going back to grade school, are important, but they're a result of that. So I'm just trying to get my mind around this, the letter of intent, but it seems to me that we need to reorganize that letter of intent and start with the most important goal, which is completion, to me, and I'm willing to add the issue about entering early. But completion to me seems to be the most important thing. The reason we want to put all this money into a scholarship is we want more students to complete. And somehow then, out of that, after that's established, then can come all of these other issues.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner, any thoughts on the letter of intent? The letter of intent is basically your original goals that you had in the government in your original bill. Is that correct,
Senator Meyer? That's correct.
And the House put those back, had those, left those in. Is that correct,
Senator Meyer? I believe that they did. I think that through an amendment, and I'm not sure if, where it is right now, but I do think it passed. They added one other to it, so I don't know if it showed up here or not. I would also like to point out that, you know, Saturday and Sunday are sort of like Friday and every other day of the week, and if your staff is available and they have questions and want to work over the weekend to help prepare for Monday, I'm at their call.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's great. I appreciate that. I'm not real sure we're ready to come to any conclusions as to where this committee is without having some more committee input, and I think that's what we're going to have to do on Monday, and we'll just spend the whole day on Monday just getting a feel for where the committee members are with your concerns and how they relate to our CS. Certainly we're a separate body from the House, but we do appreciate the work that they've done on this as well, so we'll keep that in consideration. And then, so I think we will be working on this over the weekend, and I do appreciate you offering your services. But I think the committee, we'll spend the whole meeting on Monday then just sorting through this, and like I said, then hopefully by Wednesday have a finished product, Friday at the latest. Yes.
Just to your question, Diane Behrens, for the record, to your question on how the House framed the inclusion of the goals, the leading statement is the program shall be administered to further the following goals. So I think that by phrasing it in that way, they're essentially saying these are administrative principles that you, the Department of Education, Commission, and Department of Labor need to be mindful of in further developing the program.
Okay, we'll take a look at how they address that. All right, anything else come up for the committee? If not, I think that's all the administrative things we need to take care of today. And as I mentioned, we'll continue the discussion on this on Senate Bill 224 on Monday at 8 o'clock. And with that, we're adjourned.